This is NASCAR driver Tony Breidinger inviting you to make a pit stop at Raising Cane's for my favorite craveable chicken fingers. Turbocharge your order and get it even faster when you order online or with the Raising Cane's app. Raising Cane's chicken fingers, one love. Raising Cane's is not affiliated with NASCAR.
This is the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
I'm a big star, you know.
Listen live weekday mornings from 5 to 8 a.m. on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play ESPN New York 98.7.
Thanks. Is DCR.
Zach Wilson's going to get paid. This is a technicality in terms of offset language in the contract.
Trevor Lawrence was fighting for no offset language in his contract, which means if he gets cut in year three or four, he can double dip. He gets his guaranteed money from Jacksonville and he can go sign with another team. So he won that battle. So Zach Wilson can probably go to the Jets and say, hey, I want no offset language in my contract either.
I mean, this is business. Joe's got a great handle on everything. And when it gets done, it gets done.
Give him the language in the contract that he wants. This is just one of those that's a bad look for.
This is DCR on 98.7 ESPN.
DCR on 98.7 ESPN presented by Progressive Insurance. Guests appear via the Goodyear hotline, and we've got one lined up right now. He's a champion, and he is one of the best we've got on ESPN in terms of all of the different shows he appears on. Football expert Jeff Saturday joins us now on the Goodyear Hotline with Bob Wischusen and Chris Canty, DCR, 98.7 ESPN. Jeff, I heard you called like 5 minutes ago, right? Like, that's a football player, right? Like if I'm not 5 minutes early, I'm 10 minutes late. We appreciate that.
Absolutely. That's an offensive lineman in me, right? Keep a pin with you and always be early, baby. Don't give me any excuse to cut you.
Hey, you know, I want to ask this question to you and to Chris Canty both. Take that back. I'll get to the question I had for you guys in a second. But we led off just now with this, you know, Jets, Zach Wilson, offset language. He may not be there for practice number one. Is that significant to you? If you were on this team, would that be a thorn in your side? The quote-unquote franchise quarterback wasn't there for the first practice or two, or is this a mountain out of a molehill? What's your take?
Yeah, I kind of think it's a little ridiculous, right? I mean, how hard can this be to get your guy in? Like, you've already gotten a shortened offseason. You have an extended regular season. You kind of want as many cuts at it as you can. I just don't see the language being that big of a deal. So my expectations as a guy in the locker room would be, get him done, man. Like, let's get to work. You drafted him too. So we're expecting him to be around, right? So whatever the offset language is about, if he has to go play for another team, like, man, you're praying that doesn't happen. So let's move on and get this guy in camp, so we can all get better together, as opposed to it's one thing if it's a different position, but like, your whole offense is predicated on this guy. You know, let's get to work, get this thing done. I think it's a little bit of a hiccup that I would not have expected if I'm in that locker room.
Jeff, I know a lot of people around NFL circles have a lot of positive things to say about what the Jets have done this offseason, from hiring Rob Saleh, yep, continuing to address the offensive line with moving up to draft Elijah Vera Tucker and adding Morgan Moses, like just trying to reshape this organization overall and develop the program under Joe Douglas. I guess my question to you would be, what would constitute a successful season for the Jets, knowing that you have the New England Patriots, the Miami Dolphins, and the Buffalo Bills in your division, and you're starting a rookie quarterback day one?
Oh, man, I think you get anywhere near 500, and you're probably pretty satisfied, right? I mean, when you think about last year and kind of what everything happened, I'm 100% sold on Saleh, kind of like you are. I think this guy is an incredible football coach. I think they're going to be better on defense than people expect. It's really going to be about the growing pains for Wilson, man. I mean, I think their offensive line is much better. I actually liked Vera Tucker a lot coming out. I think he's really solid in pass. Obviously, Becton with coming into his second year, as long as he stays healthy, I think this offensive line is good. And so when you're kind of looking, everybody kind of has to figure out how to play together. Again, it's all going to be predicated, though, on, and you and I both know, the errors that Wilson makes, right? Like, the highs can be extremely high. You can have some really good ones. It's that consistency. It's like, when is the standard or the bar set where you know, our bad games are still decent, right? We're not killing ourselves and finding ways to lose from the quarterback position. So that's probably the part that I'm looking at most. I think the upside of Wilson is incredible, but it's can he consistently play week in and week out and keep this team? So I think 500, Chris, is where I would say, man, would be one that you'd go, wow, man, we have really turned the corner, and our fans should be really excited about the future.
Same question for the Giants then. With what the Giants have done this offseason, what should a Giant fan fairly expect would be, you know, an acceptable, a good season?
Yeah, I think pushing for the playoffs. I think the expectation for me on this, again, goes to the quarterback, which is probably a little unfair. And I don't mean this from a win and loss perspective. Daniel Jones has not pulled his weight. You know, when you think about how many turnovers this guy has had in comparison for productive touchdowns and plays, like, you just can't win in the NFL, whether it's in the pocket or whether it's making, you know, a bad judgment call late in the game or late in the drive. Those are the things. And again, I think the team has done a really good job of surrounding him and getting better as a whole. I know Barkley may not play early this season. I know it's kind of iffy, and no one knows exactly how knees are going to turn out, especially for running backs. But when I look at this team, this is kind of Daniel Jones' year to prove it. I mean, if he doesn't prove it, I think you move on and you have to go find your next guy. So from my perspective there, so you got to push for the playoffs. I mean, you have Washington, who's definitely better. You have Dallas, who's obviously, you know, with Dak coming back. But, man, look, if you're the New York Giants, man, you think to yourself, we've loaded them up with some good players on the outside, drafting Tony and that kind of thing. Man, go play and yep. Show us you're the guy who can carry our franchise.
Jeff, you brought his name up. I got to ask you about Saquon Barkley. I know we're not quite a year removed from when he had his knee reconstructed, but the Giants have done a good job of tempering expectations about when we would see Saquon and you know whether or not he'd be available for week one. What's your take on how they should handle this situation with him throughout the preseason? And then what are your expectations for Saquon Barkley in terms of his impact on this Giants offense and this team overall in 2021?
Hey man, I'm not sure he gets a carry in preseason. You know, what I mean, I can remember whether it was with Edgerrin James or Joseph Addai, you know, the running backs that we had there in Indy. Man, they take such a beating during the season. I don't need him taking shots, right? And everybody's like, well, you want to see how his knee's going to turn out? Well, I want to see when his knee turns out when it matters. You know, don't let me see when no one cares what the score is, right? Like, so let's get him where we're all getting paid. You know, we're all getting paid to win real games. So, and it is a long season, Chris, and you and I both know from a running back position, it's going to take him 2 or 3 weeks to find the rhythm anyway. Because that goes for the entire offense. Like, offenses in general take a little bit longer to kind of find their stride. So Why rush him back? We know we got 17 games. I think the Giants have really handled this extremely well, and I think patience is a virtue in this situation. Be patient with him. I think whether it's week one, two, kind of in that area, if he comes back, kid's freaking explosive. You and I both know it. You want all pieces and parts of him to feel fresh and strong. Fresh legs as a running back, man, is always what puts a smile on your face. So to me, it's just make sure you manage him, because what happens is when it becomes real, players are ready to get back out there. So you may actually have to pump the brakes on him as opposed to just the fans. You know exactly what I'm saying there, Chris.
Yeah, Jeff, but from a psychological standpoint, like I understand when you're coming back from those knee injuries, because I had a multi-ligament reconstruction as well. Like, a part of your rehab process is being able to get those jitters out, you know, getting those first hits out and building that confidence that your knee is solid, that your knee is stable. I mean, with no preseason action, you're asking for Saquon Barkley to go through that part of the rehab on the fly in the regular season. Do you have any concern there with him being able to bounce back from this mentally at that point in the season?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. But no, but I would, what I meant by that is I would make sure I'm managing it during the game, right? Like, I'm not going to, week one, I'm not giving him 25 totes, right? Like, like, I may get him in there. That's what I mean by bringing him along slowly, right? Is make sure that as he's out there, he may get 10 snaps, right? 15 snaps. And you know, he's going to block a few times. He's going to do those kinds of things. You kind of know scripting, hey, what's he going to do? And then you can kind of see where he is and the way that his body is really, you know, really coming back from this injury. My biggest concern would be you put the guy out there, you know, in a preseason and he freaking tweaks it, you know what I mean? Because he's coming back a little early. It's not quite time. Like, again, there's no rush, in my opinion, for the length of this season. I think if you're the Giants and the Giants organization, you say, hey, we'll start to kind of bleed him back in this offense as the season starts, and then he'll be a bigger part, you know, once you hit week four, right? I mean, because to think about how we looked at even Tom Brady last year with the Buccaneers, it takes time for everybody to kind of fall back together. You can't just magically make it happen. So if you're you know, kind of balancing Saquon, it's let's bring him in as the season progresses, not to rush him, but definitely not just turn him loose. Say he's gonna have a 30 snap game week one. I'm not in for that either. I think they know better than that. But it's bringing back as the season starts, not earlier than that.
Yeah, the most fascinating guy in the NFL to watch early this season might be Saquon Barkley for exactly that reason. Hey, Jeff, I want to ask you a question. I'm going to ask you and Chris both this question because this is something I haven't even gotten into with CC yet. But you guys, I know, were both team leaders, vocal locker room guys, guys that had no problem speaking your mind to your teammates. There will be guys, I'm sure, that are going to be speaking their mind to their teammates this season. I know the union cannot mandate 100% vaccination among the players, right? Because then if you've got the one outlier, you're left in a position where you can't represent the guy that's a part of your union. But clearly, the union is about as on board with that philosophy as they can be because they've gone along with and haven't opposed the NFL putting these provisions in where, like, if you have a COVID outbreak on a team, you forfeit the game, you don't get paid, the other team doesn't get paid, the team now has to reimburse the league for all the lost revenue. I mean, the penalties for having a COVID outbreak are so significant, it's almost like the union pseudo-saying to their membership, you guys all better get vaccinated, and not having a problem with that. So now I'm going to put you guys both in the position. How would you be talking to your teammates, or how would you be talking to maybe even other guys around the league if they are vaccine or anti-vax outliers, because if 80% of the guys are vaccinated, you know, that still means 20% of the guys are a danger and need to be talked to. How would you guys handle that?
Yeah, you know, I think from my perspective, this has been one of the most divisive, and look, I've talked to GMs around the league. This has been, even from a leadership perspective, Bob, like this has been, you know, captains on teams have been kind of at odds with this thing. I think the balance, the hard part is, to your point, is kind of what the union has allowed the league to do. But from a general manager perspective and a head coach perspective, it's the balance from players to make sure that we don't let it divide our locker room, right? Is hey man, here's what the league has said that we need to do. So just sitting down and literally having just open conversation and keeping the dialogue open and moving, I think is going to be extremely important, because what you said is it's happened, right? Like the league has already stated this is going to be, the union kind of went along, or like you said, pseudo signed off on this thing. So I don't think it's a union issue or like a player issue. This is from a general manager issue and from a head coach issue. How do we keep guys locked arms here? Because I can tell you it is very personal in the locker rooms. And from guys that I've talked to, they're like, I mean, you know, I've had guys tell me, Jeff, man, like one captain thinks this, the other captain thinks that. Like we're trying to balance right now of where it is. And so I think that's going to be the thing that as you go forward in the season, it's does the fatigue and the exhaustion of having to jump through the hoops that the league is going to mandate happens, whether it's the testing or the masking or, you know, all the wristbands, like all the things that, you know, people have talked about, right? Like how does all that play out? I think that's going to be more of a conversation. Is do guys just get worn out and go, you know what, man, I'm done with it? Or do they kind of stick to, hey, I'm just not going to do this? Because the truth is you can't make anybody do it. And the last thing you wanted to do is split a locker room. So you're going to go in and go, hey, man, whatever we decide, we're in and we're united. And whatever happens, if something happens, an outbreak does, we're going to deal with that then. But until it happens, man, we're riding together. I think that's got to be the message that you have in your locker room. Because to your point, it's going to get really personal really quick when money starts getting stopped.
Yeah. What do you think, CeCe?
No, I'm in agreement with Jeff. I think it's really interesting that the NFL made their position clear in saying that if a game is canceled and it can't be rescheduled, I mean, not postponed, but actually canceled, that not only the team that had the outbreak will forfeit their checks, but that would be the opposing team, the opponent, would also have to forfeit their checks. It's almost like putting peer pressure on players in order to move people closer to that vaccination threshold that the NFL is comfortable with. But Jeff, last question for me. You were talking about riding together. It feels like the Packers and Aaron Rodgers are going to be riding together for at least one more season. What do you make of the concessions that the organization has made for A-Rod with this contract renegotiation? And how does that play out in terms of what we see from the Packers in 2021?
Yeah, I like it. Listen, I mean, I thought the Packers were going to wait and make Aaron sit out actual games. You know what I mean? So, I always believed that Aaron was coming back. I said that, from way back when, and I know that to be true. I just think that the leverage was with the Packers. But the Packers made the decision to concede even before training camp to, hey, if it doesn't work out, he can move on. I think it was really a strong move by the Packers. Look, man, they have a chance. They've been in the NFC Championship game the last 2 years. They have a good chance to get back there this year, if not win the whole thing. I think from their perspective is, hey, listen, we're just buying ourselves time. We can still talk him out of wanting to leave, but we know if we cut off the talk some, we're not going to give him anything. Even if he comes back, we know that thing's going to be dead. So, I think what they did was smart. Again, it was a little earlier than I thought, but man, if you want to win a Super Bowl, I think the decision they made the most sense.
Well, football's back, Jeff. Can't tell you how much we appreciate the time you gave us this morning. Thanks a million. We'll be watching all year.
Oh, love it, fellas. Y'all be good.
All right, you too.
Thanks for listening to the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
You're absolutely right.
Catch the show on demand wherever and whenever you want. Just subscribe to us, rate us, and review us wherever you get your podcasts.
CeCe, we talked a little bit with Jeff Saturday about the whole vaccination issue in the NFL, and Logan Ryan apparently had some things to say about how he views how the NFL is approaching this topic. It's kind of a long cut, but for, a well-known player to come out and talk about not only the NFL but the union and where everything stands in terms of how they're viewing vaccination of players, I think it's interesting to get his take and then off of that get your take as well. So here's Logan Ryan.
The rule where, if a game is canceled, players, won't get paid on either team was in effect last year. So that was the same case of last year. If a game were to be canceled completely and not played at all on the schedule, both players, and that took a lot of people aback last year as well. And we obviously were able to make them all fit. The thing is this year with fans being back in stadiums, it'll be a lot harder to just move a game from Monday to Tuesday than when the Steelers played on a Wednesday morning or something. So it's a lot less flexibility. I think it's been made clear to all the players, regardless how you feel about vaccinations, I believe everyone has their right, but it's going to be really hard. The NFL is making it really difficult with the protocols to be unvaccinated. You see some other franchises where assistant coaches have been terminated because of it, and it's very, very hard day to day to be unvaccinated. I know I am vaccinated. I personally am because I've talked to enough doctors. I believe in Ronnie Barnes, our team doctor, and my wife last year went to a couple of medical procedures. Was in a hospital last year during the whole COVID outbreak, so that was pretty scary for us, and I couldn't see her as much as I wanted to, so that was important for me and my family to get vaccinated. I encourage players too, but I also, I'm not going to demand anybody to if they don't want to, if that's what they believe. It's just going to be really difficult day to day and almost costly with the amount of fines that they can hit you with, 24/7 monitoring, having your mask over your nose, you're getting fined like $15,000 like overnight. So I think the league's making it pretty clear where they want people to be when it comes to vaccination.
Well, the league has made it very clear. I mean, I work for the Jets. We got as a non-player, as a part of the organization, we were told vaccination or don't come to the building. That's it. You're not allowed here. You're not allowed to do your job unless you get vaccinated. And I was happy to go get vaccinated. I was the first person online. I ran there as soon as I could get an appointment because I believe the doctors and the science as well. But Chris, when you listen to Logan Ryan, I think a very level-headed way to talk about this topic, but once you start messing with guys' money, and once you start messing potentially with the opponent's money, like the team that's not even guilty of the outbreak also losing their checks. As you said to Jeff Saturday, I can't imagine there's not going to be a lot of peer pressure around the league, the 80% that are vaccinated or thereabouts, to tell the 20%, hey, you guys got to do this, and hopefully you'll get the majority of them to do it, or else you're messing with one of my 17 game checks.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, the NFL is making these stipulations because they don't want the players' decisions to impact their bottom line, especially when we have science and the vaccines that are readily available to us. Like that now that we have that as a tool that we can use to fight the pandemic, the NFL owners are looking at it and saying, there's no good reason as far as we see it as to why we shouldn't try to make as much money as we can in 2021, why we shouldn't have to try to have full stadiums, why we can't make sure that we have the ability to get all 17 regular season games for all 32 teams around the league in. And so I think that's really where this thing kind of comes to a head of a bit of sorts, because it's ultimately about the owners trying to make as much money as they can. And if you're a player, you have to have some awareness. You have to recognize where you're at. And although you do have the right to say that you don't want to be vaccinated, you have to understand that there are certain consequences that come along with making that decision, including potentially jeopardizing some of your teammates' ability to be able to make money. So this is one of those, like, everybody has their rights and you can't really infringe on folks' rights. But because of how the NFL set up the protocols, I think players have to recognize, okay, one of the most important things in terms of me being able to do my job is to make sure that I'm available to my team. And a part of that, in my opinion, would be to get vaccinated. But again, to each his own. I get why, you know, the NFL can't mandate it, why the union can't mandate it. But at the same time, it's one of those, like, the NFL owners are looking at it and saying there's no good reason why we're not going to play all the games on the slate.
I mean, you're approaching this, Logan Ryan sounded like he's approaching this, very level-headed. You don't think there are going to be potentially, like, fist fights in locker rooms at some point this year between guys that are worried about whether or not they're going to miss game checks or games are going to get postponed or there are going to be these serious consequences? You don't think there are going to be some guys that are really going to go nose-to-nose with the anti-vaxxers just to make sure that they get the message across? You could potentially screw the overall.
It's not a problem until it's a problem, Bob.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, we were talking about the potential for there to be an issue, but until it pops up, I don't think you're going to have that type of conflict in the locker room. I think everybody's going to try to pull the rope in the same direction. Everybody's going to do the things that it takes to try to be safe. But if, for in one instance, you have a situation where a guy chooses not to get vaccinated and that becomes a problem, he gets infected and spreads it throughout the team, and that causes you to miss games or miss game checks, like that's when it becomes an issue. That's when you have to worry about, you know, guys being divided in the locker room with something that Jeff Saturday alluded to. Like, I don't think that, you know, guys are going to start out with that going into training camp and saying, hey man, you better get vaccinated or else. I don't think it'll be that type of approach. But if we get down the road and we're dealing with a COVID outbreak because there was somebody that was unvaccinated, I think that's when you'll start to see some fissures within NFL locker rooms, because guys want to make money. I mean, when I came into the league, Bob, I mean, the veteran players, they said the difference between college and pro is that players in this locker room are depending on you to do your job in order for them to feed their family. Like, that's a big deal. And so, you know, a part of your job is your availability. And if for whatever reason you were to be if for this particular reason you were to be unavailable and it was within your control to try to mitigate, you know, COVID impacting you or your locker room, I think guys are going to take a serious offense to that.
Yeah, average guy plays for 4 years, right? You're only making this money for a finite amount of time as an NFL player. And I guess what's that old story about Bill Russell, right? Like, Red Auerbach, I think, told Bill Russell, because he didn't want to throw an elbow. He was getting knocked around, but he was a gentleman and didn't want to kind of return fire with fire. And Red Auerbach told him, you know, just on television one time, throw an elbow. You'll never have to do it again. And he did it and, you know, kind of sent the message, and the message went around the league. Do you think think there are guys in the league that don't really think the NFL is going to follow through with a game cancellation until they actually see it happen. And they don't think they'll follow through with two teams being docked a check until they actually see it happen. And maybe the NFL only has to do it once to show all these guys, look, we're serious about this. We're not kidding around. We will dock you a check. We will cancel a game. We will put it on you and your organization. And maybe if it happens once, all of a sudden now, every other locker room guys will be looking at each other going, hey, guys, like, they did it. They're serious about this. They called our bluff, and here it now has happened.
Yeah, but see, here's the difference, Bob. I don't think there are any NFL players out there that think the owners are bluffing with what they said late last week.
Okay.
Like, when the owners say, like, we'll cancel the game, and both teams are going to forfeit their game checks. Like, I don't think there's a player around the NFL that thinks that the owners don't have the resolve to follow through on that. Like, that they would absolutely do that, because the owners know, like, the players know that the owners, they're going to make the players eat the losses before they eat the losses this season. Now, last season was a different animal, and everybody understands why, and they were asking the players around the league to do a lot, because you're compromising your health to play a season in the middle of a pandemic without having the vaccine as a tool to fight against it. But now that the vaccine is available, I mean, the owners are saying, we're not going to incur the cost of, you know, a COVID interruption when you have science, when you have the vaccine there. That's going to be on you guys moving forward.
Yep.
And so that's where the peer pressure comes into play. But again, I think that the approach will be from leadership in locker rooms. They're going to try to make sure that everybody is following whatever protocols that they have to follow, whether they're vaccinated or unvaccinated. This won't become a problem in terms of division until you have one of those COVID postponements or interruptions when there's an outbreak. I just don't see that happening.
Thanks for listening to the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
I don't wake up at 4 a.m. to wear a swim shirt.
Looking for more access to the show? Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at DCR on ESPN.
And Ira, Staten Island's been very patient, as usual, joins us next on 98.7 ESPN. Hey, Ira.
Hey, good morning, Bob. Good morning, Chris. Hey, before I get to the sports stuff, hey, Bob, you know, my fault. I've spoken to you many, many times since this pandemic broke out. I just want to thank you and your wife, and basically your wife, when this whole thing started. I think a lot of people out there know she was right in the front lines and testing people. So I just want to thank you and your family for doing that.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I did very little, and my wife has done, like, an amazing amount. She went from testing to vaccinating people, vaccinated me, and, she volunteered at the start of this whole thing. She and a really good friend of ours, because my wife's an RN, worked in hospitals, doctor's offices, worked, you know, multiple places, but we have five kids, so obviously has not been a full-time RN over the past decade or so, but has still gone to Haiti on medical missions and whatnot, always kept her license active. And one of our other friends was a school nurse when they closed the school, so the two of them got together. They were like, we know all of these people, all of our friends that we've worked with over the years, doctors, nurses, that are out there on the front lines, in ICUs, in emergency rooms, in hospitals fighting this. We have to do something. And so the two of them called a friend of ours to put them in touch with the Medical Reserve Corps, and they just volunteered. 5 days after they had that conversation in a supermarket, they were draped in the PPE, and they were the people swabbing people through their car windows as they drove through the tents at Kane University in Jersey, and have been there ever since. So they went from testing to vaccinating people. But, yeah, like, I'm just a knucklehead that talks about sports, and they actually, like, are saving people's lives.
Well, thank you. I just want to thank her for that. And
I will pass that along. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Getting to the toy department, which is the sports. You know, listen, of course, disappointed Zach isn't there today. But, you know, the bottom line is, you know, I scratch my head. They had 3 months to get this done, and I understand it. Organizations have, you know, their ways of doing things. Agents want to get the most out of their clients. But it's pretty much slotted. You know, everybody's talking about the offset language. I get that. I understand there's policies that teams go by. But I also read a report, you know, by Florio that, you know, there's money involved. And it seems that, you know, if he's correct, I don't think he's going to put it out there if it's not. You know, the Jets want to kind of put part of the signing bonus to the end of 2022 instead of giving it all up front. And he mentioned that Burrows and that Bosa and that Chase Young and that Lawrence all got their, and Donald all got their money, you know, right up front. And If that's really, you know, if that's true, then the Jets got to get this done because, listen, you know, one or two practices is not a big deal. I don't care about that. But, you know, by Monday or Tuesday, if he's not in camp, then all of a sudden, then you're going to have a situation. So I'm hoping by, you know, hopefully tomorrow morning we find out Zach Wilson signed. Let's leave it at that.
Yeah, I mean, if 5 or 6 days goes by, then yes, I would say call back. I can't imagine that that's going to be the case. I just can't imagine it.
No, neither do I. No, I can't see it either. I really can't. Just too much positive vibe, you know, except for the tragedy last week. So you want to try to rebound from that the best as you can. Prayers to the family. And just, you know, hopefully they could get themselves back on track and get Wilson into camp.
All right, Ira, thanks for the call.
Yeah, and here's the thing. I mean, and Ira brings up a good point, and we haven't talked a lot about the offensive coordinator, Greg Knapp, that passed away last week. But, I mean, that would, to me, as an organization, that would put more, I don't want to use the word pressure, but that would give me more motivation to try to get Zach Wilson in sooner rather than later, knowing that there are going to be all of these moving parts behind the scene, knowing that you're going to have to get used to another personality that's going to be calling the plays and understanding how all of that is going to work itself out for preparing for the regular season. Like, it just seems like there's no good reason not to have him in camp, whether it's the cash flow issue with the signing bonus or the offset language that you're insisting on having with all of your rookie contracts. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me as to why Zach Wilson is not in training camp to get every opportunity to improve that he possibly can have.
And maybe you can have a different standard with a franchise quarterback, but I guess to play devil's advocate, okay, so for people that don't understand the offset language part of this, and you talked about it earlier, you want to have the language in the contract where if you cut a player who's a first-round draft choice, now they're not cutting Zach Wilson. This is more about setting a precedent. But if you have this offset language and you cut a player, it allows you to recoup the money that you would have had to have paid that player and put it back towards your finances and your salary cap if that player then goes and signs with another team, rather than that player collecting money from the other team and collecting your money and double dipping. All right, so is that ever going to be a circumstance that you're worried about having to deal with Zach Wilson? No, right? I mean, he's either going to be a tradable commodity like Sam Darnold was, or you're all getting fired because he was the second pick in the draft and it didn't work out. I mean, he's going to be here for, I'm sure, the next 5, 7, 10, 12 years. So,
yeah,
but let's say, just for the sake of argument, mm-hmm. Cece, that you give him this offset language or give him what he wants and eliminate the offset language from the contract. Like, what percentage of first-round draft choices inside of 4 or 5 years in the NFL change teams? Aren't with their original team, especially teams that are good, that are picking at the back end of the first round, that, you know, may be taking a little more of a I mean, obviously you should hit on your first round draft choice,
yeah.
But we know from math everybody doesn't. Even good teams sometimes whiff on a first round draft choice.
Yeah.
So what you're worried about is anybody else that you draft in the first round that you're much less sure is going to be with you 4 or 5 years down the road, now being able to turn around and say, wait a minute, you gave Zach Wilson that language, you set a precedent, you caved, you should cave for me. They're trying to hold firm on, apparently with 30 out of 32 teams hold firm on, they're going to get him in camp, but you know, I think that's all this is about, is establishing a precedent where it might become a riskier argument to make with future first-round draft choices than it is with your future franchise quarterback.
Well, here's why I wouldn't worry about it being a precedent. I mean, how often are you going to expect to be in the top two in the NFL draft if all goes according to plan? Not very often. How often are you going to be in the market and drafting a franchise quarterback in the top 10 in the NFL draft? Not very often. Now, I mean, it's happened for the Jets twice in the last 4 years, but I mean, this is an aberration. This is an outlier. This is not what they expect the norm to be. So, again, I come back to the organization. I don't understand why they're fighting this as much as they are. Like, with Zach Wilson, there is no fighting when it comes to the money that he's going to get. It's $35.1 million on a 4-year contract with $22.9 in signing bonus.
Right.
Like, that's what it is.
Right.
So, I mean, there's no negotiation from his standpoint or his representation standpoint. But the one thing that you do want to guard against is that if, for whatever reason, this thing comes off the rails and the Jets decide that they're going to move on from you, which they already did to the quarterback that they took with the third overall pick back in 2018, if they decide that they're going to cut you before the end of your rookie deal and you go and you catch on somewhere else as an opportunity to move your career forward, I don't understand why the Jets want some kind of credit back from Zach Wilson in terms of the money that they've already paid him out. That doesn't make any sense.
But they don't. They know that it's never going to come into play with Zach Wilson.
Well, that's what I'm saying. But here's the thing. Here's the thing when you start making the precedent argument.
Right.
Everybody around the NFL, all the players around the NFL know that quarterbacks are treated differently than any other position. So you don't have to worry about a precedent. Everybody already understands that. Like, this is not a thing for Elijah Vera Tucker. This is not a thing for Mekhi Becton. Like this is only something that's going to come down to a few players.
So let me ask you a question.
Your organization is ever going to have the opportunity to draft.
So you're telling me you're an agent and you represent like a defensive lineman that they might draft 3 years from now. Let's say the Jets become all of a sudden really good and they're in the AFC Championship game in 3 years.
Okay.
And they're drafting 30th. And you got a pass rusher that may or may not work out. He's got a high ceiling. We're not sure. We're going to take him with the 30th pick, though, because we think that he may be able to, you know, be a good player for us. But obviously a lot less certain he's going to be on the team 3, 4, 5 years down the road than we were with Zach Wilson. You, as an agent, aren't going to make the argument to the Jets, wait a minute, you gave your first-round draft choice a couple of years ago this offset language. I want the same for my guy.
Yeah,
you're saying that every agent is just going to say, oh, that was a franchise quarterback. I'm not even going to make the argument?
No, every agent can try to make that argument. That's fair. But I think every agent also understands the reality of the situation. The practical side of this argument, it's just like, this is a quarterback that was taken with the second overall pick. The second overall pick has a hell of a lot more leverage over the organization than the 30th overall pick. He just does.
Yes.
So, I mean, that's
and
just
the quarterback.
And the quarterback. So that's the reality of it. Like, for a practical matter, that's how this thing is viewed, and that's what most players understand. Most agents understand. So, I mean, I just feel like this is one of those straw man arguments if you're the Jets. Like, this is something that nobody's arguing. Like, it's just, oh, we don't want to set a precedent. Nobody's talking about you setting a precedent when you're talking about a quarterback that you use the second overall pick on that's going to be your day one starter. Right now in training camp, Jamison Crowder is throwing more than the quarterback, throwing more NFL passes than the quarterbacks that you have in James Morgan and Mike White. Like, that's where you're at. Like,
right.
Why are we messing around with this thing? Get Zach Wilson into training camp. Now, if this is something that gets worked out today or tomorrow, will it be a huge issue? No. But if this is something that lingers a week into training camp, I mean, it goes from being a bad look to something that you actually have to worry about in terms of your quarterback being behind and having enough time to catch up to be ready to go week one.
Why is this only an argument, though, that's ever made as if the only people that are at fault here is the organization? Like, if you're saying it's a straw man argument, it's a no-brainer. Zach Wilson is going to play. He's going to be the franchise quarterback. He's going to get all of his money. He's going to get his signing bonus. Ultimately, what's the difference? Why, then, is the argument never made to the player and the agent, hey, man, why are you haggling over this irrelevant language in your contract? You're going to get paid. You're going to be their quarterback. Why do you care? Right? The only people that ever get blamed in this argument is the team. The team gets, why are you being so hard-nosed? Why are you not getting him into camp? It's your fault. Why is there no blame assigned to the player and the agent?
Player has a lot more to lose, Bob. I mean, that's what it comes down to. I mean, if the organization...
Yeah, but not this guy.
Yeah, well, you say not this guy.
He's going to get all of his money from his rookie deal.
Well, we hope he does. We hope he does. There's no guarantee that he finishes his rookie deal with the Jets.
All right,
there's no guarantee.
Is that not then a tacit argument that the Jets have every right to hold firm here and have the offset language in the contract?
Well, here's my point. The Jets are the ones that have to assume the risks. They decided they were going to draft Zach Wilson with the second overall pick. That's on them. Like, they're the ones that made the decision. So, I mean, I don't understand why they're putting themselves in a position knowing that he has to be the guy from day one, why they would then say, you know what, this is what we're going to do. We want to insist on having this offset language. But in the back of our minds, we know that we're going to have to rely on you to be our starting quarterback because we don't trust the guys that we have in camp right now in Mike White and James Morgan. The Yep. Jets have boxed themselves into that. That's not the situation that the 49ers are in with Trey Lance and Jimmy Garoppolo. Like, they're having that same drag out back and forth about cash flow and offset language. But guess what? Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch, they have a guy that's taking that team to the Super Bowl that can be their week one starter. The Jets don't have that luxury. So that's why I don't understand why they're picking this hill to die on.
Yep. You suck me into this argument. I'm a little angry at you that now all of a sudden I'm like arguing about something that we all know is probably going to be over in 24 to 48 hours and no one's really going to care next week when he's on the field. And somehow you suck me into this and you got me like all of a sudden all worked up and making an argument at like a complete mountain out of a molehill. I'm blaming you.
Well, you can blame me, Bob, but here's the thing. We both admit that this is not the best of looks for the Jets.
It's not a good look. And also on the heels of the same thing having happened with Sam Darnold.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Do we expect that this is going to be something that's a big deal? No, we don't, because I think we both look at it and say Zach Wilson is going to be in camp before the end of this weekend. Like, he'll be there. So, I mean, there still seems like there will be plenty of time. I guess my whole thing was, knowing how important Zach Wilson is to getting this new chapter in Jets football off to a great start, you got a rookie head coach. I just don't understand why you would want any delay, why you would want any mispractice reps from your future franchise quarterback. It just doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
All right. Again, I've been working all night on Rule 76, so I'm mentally priming myself for that. I've got seven more minutes. Let's get Emmanuel and Flushing in next here on 98.7 ESPN. Emmanuel.
Yes. Well, first off, I just want to give my prayers to Ms. Simone Biles and hope she gets the help she needs. And, it's hard. You know, listen, at the end of the day, you know, mental health is a very serious situation, and I wish well, because we've seen the last 3 years, we've seen athletes speaking about mental health from Royce White, Lamar DeRozan, Kevin Love, you know, recently Naomi Osaka, and now Simone Biles, because those people out there have a problem of athletes speaking about mental health. I mean, they should be ashamed of themselves, because, listen, at the end of the day, athletes are human beings too, because you don't know what they go through every day in a basis, because you see, what's going on, last year, Dak Prescott talked about dealing with mental health after the loss of her brother. If you have a problem with that, they should be ashamed of themselves, in my opinion.
Agree.
Yeah, I think Bob and I are both on the same page that you are, Emmanuel. Like, I don't understand why folks can have such a strong negative opinion about Simone Biles making a decision that she made a couple days ago. Like, it doesn't make sense to me. Like, we're not inside of her head. We don't know the pressure that she's feeling. We don't know the state of her mental health. So, I mean, how can you have a strong opinion about whether or not she should compete? It seems incredibly ignorant, and I guess I would want to say that it's one-off, Bob, but those opinions are out there everywhere. And I think it's, again, a reflection of the attitudes that some folks have toward mental health, and they don't take it as seriously as we do the physical health of high-level athletes.
I mean, as if she is not experiencing consequences from this decision as well. This is a young lady that has done nothing but train every single day, building all the way up to this event. And, you know, don't give me, she competed in the American Championships, the World Championships. Nobody outside of the silo of the gymnastics world cares a lick about anything in that sport other than the Olympics, right? The Olympics are the Super Bowl, the World Series, the NCAA tournament, the National Championship football game, and all rolled into one. It's the only event that all of us, And all of her future endorsements, all of her future opportunities, all of it is going to be based on how she performs in the Olympics. She's been training not for 5 years to go do this, and tried and realized she put herself in harm's way because she wasn't right and is willing to say, I need to take a step back. I don't know. I mean, I was so sad for her that she has arrived mentally at that point. The last thing I was thinking about is, oh, she let her teammates down, or she's being selfish. She might be leaving tens of millions of dollars on the table by not competing. I mean, to me, that's acknowledging that I've got an issue and it's something I have to deal with.
Yeah, and you could also make the argument that it's better that somebody else step in and fill those shoes than have her go out there and knowing that she's not all mentally there.
Yep.
I mean, because what kind of performance would she have turned in? Like, nobody would know. Now, we're all assigning this baseline of excellence toward her, But, I mean, we don't know what her performance would be based on the mental condition that she's in right now. And that goes back to what I've been kind of harping on all morning long, which is, you know, when you're struggling with mental health, that's as real as having a sprained ankle, or that's as real as having a sprained knee, or something going on with your shoulder. That's how real it is, and it's going to have an impact on your performance. So for her, having that level of awareness to take a step back, knowing everything that she has invested in these moments at the Tokyo Games, to have that level of awareness and to have the courage to say, you know what, I'm not right and I'm not going to compete. I'm going to take time to get my mental health straight and my teammates can pick up the slack. Like, I think that's incredibly mature for her, from her, and that's something that we should all support.
All right, I'm putting this on Santiago now because I've got like 2 minutes and 45 seconds to practice Rule 76. So he's going to do three stars while I rehearse. Go ahead.
Today's three stars of DCR.
I appreciate that, Bob. Actually, good news, no sponsor today, so I can get right into it.
Perfect.
I was tempted to put Simone Biles in there as well because, as you guys have stated, like she actually did make the sacrifice for the greater good. She didn't let her teammates down. She did the exact opposite, and that needs to be praised. And I think a lot of people missed the point. Anyway, let's actually get to more fun and three stars.
Number three.
I'm going to bring it back, Bob. I'm sorry. I got
to
do it.
13 seconds to go. The Raiders have to have a touchdown.
Come on.
They are out of timeouts. Carr takes the snap. Here comes an all-out blitz.
There's the blitz.
Steps up in the pocket. Unloads one down the left sideline. Looking for runs. Drops it in. Touchdown. Are you kidding me?
Why do we have to do that? Why do we have to do that?
The whole reason, just to bring us inside your mentality as all this was going on. And you know, I know how upset Jets fans were at the time. And I can only, like, you're holding back. I can tell, like, you're holding back what's actually going on there. So I appreciate everything about that call.
Number two.
What I also appreciate is the performance, not just of you, Bob, but also Chris Canty and Stump Rothenberg today. We can't all be Dave Rothenberg.
I have so much knowledge.
But I think you guys did an admirable job. I thought it was a great question that CC asked. I thought Andy and Merrick had a great question, and I think you guys did well.
All right.
There we go. I'll take
number
that.
Number one.
Okay, and I'm kind of cheating on this last one. I'm going to be honest with you. But, so, anyone who listens to the show knows about a week or so ago.
I would love a rest area.
Dave Rothenberg wants a rest area. Greeny,
and we'll see where it lands. Which of these would you most like to have named in your honor? An airport, a restaurant dish, a mountain, or a rest area? If you're just joining us, this stemming from Dave Rothenberg saying he wants to have a rest area, literally a place that people pull off the highway to pee, named in his honor on the New Jersey Turnpike.
So, the number one star is going to go to the state of New Jersey for putting Dave Rothenberg in his place because it just so happens, per Governor Phil Murphy, they renamed 9 Garden State Parkway service
that.
Areas. James Gandolfini, Larry Doby, Connie Chung, Whitney Houston, Jon Bon Jovi, Judy Blume, Celia Cruz, Frank Sinatra, Toni Morrison, not one of them Dave Rothenberg. I'm sorry, Dave. I don't know what to
You mean. Don't respect me?
And that's three stars.
I mean, I'm a New Jersey native. I would settle for maybe just one of the bathrooms of the rest stop being named after me.
He was adamant that the Cheesequake rest area needed to be renamed in his honor. No, that one went to Bon Jovi. I'm sorry, Dave. You're not quite Bon Jovi.
Yeah, I think Bon Jovi wins that one.
All right, that'll do it for today's DCR. I've got one extra chance here to nail Rule 76. No excuses. Play like a champion. It is Canty with Schusen. And?
Everybody.
All right, I got it again on 98.7 ESPN. See you tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
I have nothing left.
Hear more of DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg live weekday mornings from 5 to 8 a.m. on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play ESPN New York 98.7.